Thank you, dear brethren. Welcome back. We will continue with the book of Revelations. Last Sabbath, we did Revelations chapter 7, verses 1 to 12. And today, we will continue chapter 7 from verses 12 and on. I'm trusting, hoping we will complete chapter 7 today. So, we saw in chapter 7, verses 1 through 12, that there were angels, four angels, set for punishments on the earth because of the sins of the people. And they were holding back the four winds. But another angel rising from the sun basically told them to wait until, not to do anything until the servants of our Elohim were sealed on their foreheads. So who were sealed? The servants of Elohim, not just anyone, the servants. So, and these were servants from the nation of Israel. They were Israelites. There's no other interpretation given throughout the entire book of Revelations. So, and I say this because I've read, some groups believe that the tribes here represent all the Gentiles and all believers. I agree that these are all messianic believers. They are all servants of Messiah. These 12,000 from each tribe, they're all Israelites. They are all believers in Messiah, but they're not from the Gentile nations. These are indeed Israelites. And we saw that how Ephraim and Dan and Ephraim were not included in the tribe because of their trespass. And these type of things are important to note because as I said, Elohim will cut off whoever does not do right. And so they were replaced by the tribe of Joseph. By the sons of Joseph, they were replaced, but they were sealed. 144,000, 12,000 from each of the 12 of these 12 tribes listed from verses 4 to 8. This is not just a symbolic number, it's an actual number, as we saw. Elohim, from the beginning, set 7 days for our week. And the number 7 is used throughout. And these are actual numbers. When we observe the Sabbath, we work for 6 days, literal days, and we rest on the Sabbath. Though it may have deeper meaning, but it is a real number. Also the number 12, of course. 12 tribes, 12 patriarchs. Those were literal numbers. He did not want 13 tribes. He wanted only 12, specifically 12. The disciples, again, he only wanted 12. He did not want 13. And he did not want less. It had to be 12. So likewise here, these are 12 times 12,000 from each tribe. These are specific servants. It does not mean that there are only 12,000 from each tribe being saved. It just means there are only 12,000 specific servants of Israelitish in heritage being selected for whatever purpose they're being selected. There are other Israelites that are also saved, but they're not in that number. They're not going to be in this service, just as other Israelites were saved during the time of the apostles, but none of them, no more were added, other than the one who replaced Judas. And we know Paul was an apostle, but not among the Israelites. He was an apostle to the Gentiles. So this is an actual number, not some sort of symbolic number. So what else can we say here? So that's who they are. They were Israelites. What were they selected for? They were selected to serve Elohim for his purpose. The service is not described here in this chapter, I trust we will get some insights as we read further in the further chapters. So let's continue with verse 9. And here is where all nations appear. Verse 9 says, after this, I looked and behold, a great multitude that no one could number from every nation. You see, that's where all the believers come in. But even all of this number is not necessarily every single believer, and you'll see why in the description. So the multitude is from every nation, from all tribes of people and languages. So they're not Israelites. They're from all nations, including Israelites, but from all nations. They were clothed in white, so they have their righteousness, and palm branches in their hands, and crying out with a loud voice, salvation belongs to our Elohim, who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. And one of the reading today, we heard that word, salvation belongs to Elohim, who sits, right? Salvation belongs to Elohim and to the Lamb. And all the angels, verse 11, were standing around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures, and they fell on their faces before the throne and worshiped Elohim. So some people may think all of this, we know John, let me back up. We know John is seeing things, visions in the heavens. We know that. But not everything he is seeing is happening in heaven. We might assume that all of this is happening in heaven, where the 144,000 and the multitudes. Remember, it says back here in verse 3 and 4, do not harm the earth or the sea or trees until we have sealed the servants of our Elohim on their foreheads to seal them. So these people are, the 144,000 Israelites are on earth that are being selected from among the people of Israel. And the multitudes here are also on earth. They're from all nations that are chosen to be his servants. So the four living creatures and the angels worshiped Elohim, saying, amen. Blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our Elohim forever and ever, and amen. So the attitudes of these heavenly beings, that they rejoice in the work of Elohim. They're in total unity and desire what Elohim desires. And they rejoice when Elohim's work is accomplished on earth. Even as the Messiah said, when one person repents, there's rejoicing in heaven. So that's to show you the mindset, the thoughts, the hearts of the angelic community, of the people, of the host with Elohim. They're for us. They really look out and want and have our best interests in mind. Verse 13. And one of the elders addressed me, saying, who are these clothed in white robes, and from where have they come? I said to him, sir, you know. And he said to me, these are the ones coming out of the great tribulation. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of Elohim and serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to springs of living water, and Elohim will wipe away every tear from their eyes. He gives them. So who are these? Was the question. One of the elders asked him, why is the elder asking? Doesn't the elder know? Of course the elder know. But the elder wants to draw John's thinking. He wants He's helping John be an active participant in what's going on, in his learning, in his understanding. But John, like many of the prophets, being humble, said, Sir, you know. And he said to me, and then he tells John, who are these? These are the ones coming out of the great tribulation. What is the great tribulation? Is this something yet to come? Well, we need to figure this out a little bit. Because there's much talk, just as there's much talk about who the 144,000 are, there's much talk about the Great Tribulation. We've heard all sorts of ideas that we're waiting for the Great Tribulation. Let's turn to Matthew 24 just for a moment, for context, okay? Matthew 24, so we can know what the Great Tribulation is. In Matthew chapter 24, verses 15 and on, it says, "So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand." So when it says, "let the reader understand," you need to go back and check the reference of what Daniel was talking about. And when you do that, you will see it's an abomination of desolations, plural. It's not just one thing. That abomination does not have only one effect. It has many desolating effects. And desolate means to make empty, to make empty. So verse 16, and it's very important we understand that. Desolation means to make empty, to desolate, to destroy, and empty out. And let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not go down to take what is in his house. And let the one who is in the field not turn back to take his cloak. And alas, for women who are pregnant, for those days who are nursing infants in those days, pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, and never will be. And if those days had not been cut short, no persons would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Stop here. So the Great Tribulation. I will tell you, the Great Tribulation already happened, that John spoke about and that Messiah talked about. This is not a future event, our future. This was the future of the people in Messiah's generation. This is why he says, let those who are in Judea flee. Let those who are in the housetops and so on flee to the mountains. Jerusalem was wept over by Messiah not too long before his death. He wept over him, knowing what would happen. He said, you don't know, if you only knew the time of your visitation, he said. So the Great Tribulation is the destruction of Jerusalem that happened many, many years ago. That's the Great Tribulation. It was their future, not our future. Then if anyone says to you, look, here's the Messiah, or there he is, do not believe it, for false messiahs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand. So if they say to you, Messiah is speaking to a specific crowd. He's expecting them to know this for their well-being, for their safety, because these things he's talking about will happen to them. And that's why he said, see, I have told you. Why would he need to say that to them if he wasn't speaking directly to them? They were the ones who were going to experience this horrible situation. So I've told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he is in the wilderness. Who? The Messiah. It doesn't mean, look, here's Yeshua. He's saying, look, the Messiah is here. And in those days, there were many messiahs, many false leaders that came. Bar Kokhba, those in Masada, all sorts of false messiah promising deliverance that failed terribly. Jerusalem was ransacked, was destroyed. There was fighting within. The different factions, the different sect, the Herodians, the Pharisees, the Sadducees were fighting among themselves. They did not allow anyone to leave Jerusalem. There was famine. The Romans surrounded them. And finally, on the ninth day of the fifth month, up until the second day, which was the first day of the week, the temple was burnt down to the ground. The people in there were killing each other. They were starving because the Romans surrounded. They put up a good fight. I was amazed when I was looking at the history. It's amazing how powerfully they fought. But eventually the Romans crushed them. Just as King Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians, crushed them and destroyed the city in Jeremiah's time. This was not the work of the devil. This was the work and will of Elohim. People have to understand. We have to know who's who. And that's why I say, be careful who we fight against. This was the will of Elohim to destroy Jerusalem, to bring this great tribulation upon them because they did not know their time of visitation. The same way they rejected Jeremiah was the same way they rejected Yeshua. And of course, Yeshua must much worse, because the signs and wonders that were done by him, no one ever did. But they rejected him. And so they went through the great tribulation. But the disciples of Messiah knew exactly what to do. When they saw the Jerusalem surrounded, they knew that was what Messiah said. They believed their Messiah. They had faith, and they left when the opportunity came. We don't have much time to go into that history, but the great tribulation happened already. Does that mean we're scot-free, that we have no... No, these problems happen from generation to generation. There are many enemies of Messiah from generation to generation, and they will cause problems for every generation, as shown by the four horsemen. The word of Messiah goes forth, then comes the evil to persecute and cause harm. Right now in the United States, we're in some type of persecution. And those of us that are resisting, not giving in, have troubles. Nothing like this great tribulation, but we still have problems. So we need to be faithful and in prayer, not knowing where this will lead. Already today is January 1, 2022, in the Roman year. It's a new year per the Roman year, for us, our year begins in the spring, but the Roman, so we don't know what's going to happen. So we need to be praying to know what will happen. But the great tribulation came upon them as a chastisement. That's why it came, as a chastisement upon Jerusalem. And later Rome, as he always does, just as the Babylonians, King Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom was brought low, was punished for the punishment it inflicted on Jerusalem, Rome was also burnt down. Until today, no one really knows what happened. At least they're not saying. But we know it was the judgment of Elohim on Rome. But let's continue. Let's go back here to Revelations. These are the ones coming out of the great tribulation. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. So they have repented of their sins. They have overcome sins, and they have received the righteousness from Elohim through the blood of the Lamb. Verse 15, therefore they are before the throne of Elohim. Where's the throne of Elohim? The heavens. And serve him day and night in his temple. Are they serving in the heavens? No, they're not serving in the heavens. They are on earth. Let's take a look a little bit about this temple. So these would have been resurrected. John is seeing them way in their future. That's what he's seeing. So they serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. Let's take a look at the temple for a second. My reference, there are many. Isaiah chapter 4, Zechariah chapter 2, verses 4 to 5. Let me quickly turn there to Zechariah chapter 2 so we could have an idea what this temple, what this is like. Zechariah chapter 2. And I covered this, I believe, in Sukkot a little bit. So in chapter 2 of Zechariah, it says, "And I lifted up my eyes and saw, behold, a man with a measuring line in his hand." Verse 2. "Then I said, where are you going? And he said to me, to measure Jerusalem, to see what is the width and what is the length." Verse 3. "And behold, the angel who talked with me came forward, and another angel came forward to meet him and said to him, run, say to the young man, Jerusalem shall be inhabited as villages without walls because of the multitude of the people and livestock in it. 5. And I will be to her a wall of fire all around, declares the Eternal. I will be the glory in her midst." This is way into the future during the millennial period. The millennial, and what's going on? So the temple is not a temple made of stone, but it's the presence of Elohim there. He is the temple. A wall of fire all around the entirety of Jerusalem. It's not a man-made structure. And Isaiah chapter 4 says the same thing, that he will be a sukkah of fire, a booth, a tabernacle of fire over Jerusalem. So here, these people who suffered through the tribulation, that's who this multitude is. Did every believer go through tribulation like this? Not necessarily, but we all go through something. They have washed their robes in the blood of the Lamb. And it says, "And they shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any scorching heat," showing that they're on the earth. This is not something where they're serving in heaven. The angels do that. But people that are redeemed from the earth, because these were redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, they serve on earth. So the temple they would be serving in would be the structure that Elohim himself would make all around Jerusalem, that will be inhabited without walls. Have we ever known Jerusalem to be without walls? Jerusalem, the physical Jerusalem that we've known historically, has always had some sort of wall. Matter of fact, that wall served as such a defense when the Romans were attacking them, when their tribulation started. But this is a city without walls. So anyone who tells you, this is why I tell people, if anyone's telling you, oh, they're going to build a physical temple, that's going to come to nothing. Because nothing made of the hands of man is acceptable for the millennial period. It was not even acceptable to him then. He told in Haggai, he's told everything they make is unclean. Everything. Even though they were building the temple, fixing it, coming from their captivity way back in the time of Haggai, Elohim told them their work was still unclean. But by his mercy, he accepted it. But the work he's going to do in the millennium, in new covenant time, there's no room for handmade things. Everything is by the Spirit and great. So the sun shall not scorch them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb in the midst of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to springs of living water. Again, evidence these things are happening on the earth. And Elohim will wipe away every tear from their eyes. That will eventually happen. It's not happening in one day. Remember, the millennium, as you will see, is 1,000 years where people will be living on the earth. And when we read what Irenaeus and others say, that the people, and even John, per the record of Papias, the people, when we resurrect, we will not become immediately shining light beings as Messiah was when he transfigured on the mount and they saw him as his face was brighter than the sun. We will be raised perfect as perfect persons with our bodies. And we will go and we will grow from strength to strength throughout the millennial period. We're not going to be unrecognizable. Whoever, we will recognize each other. And whoever knew us that's there, we will look pretty much the same, but resurrected. If we had any defect, any ailment, anything missing, we will be whole. We will be complete. We will be better than ever we were. We will be changed. We will be changed. We won't look exactly like we did. We will look different. Better. But our development will take time, over a period of time, gradually, until we will be ready to meet the Father face to face. But until then, it is Messiah, the Lamb, who is in the midst of the throne, who will lead us, shepherd those who will be found worthy to be in that great assembly. And another thing, too, notice it says, the Lamb, I'm going to stop with for the Lamb in the midst of the throne. So Yeshua sits on his throne, but he does not have his own throne. It's the same throne of the Father. That's why he is in the midst of the throne. And he will be their shepherd, and he will guide them to springs of living water. And Elohim will wipe away every tear from their eyes. So it shows you it's a process. He will wipe away the tears from their eyes. There's a process of growing in that millennial time. So we're going to stop here at verse 17 and we'll continue next Sabbath.